When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Hi Bob, the officially unofficial podcast for all of For All Mankind. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
It's on Apple TV Plus. Did I say that? I don't know. What am I doing with this intro? I'm switching it up. That's what I'm doing. Today we're talking about Season 4, Episode 3, called The Bear Hug. Aaron, what do you think of this episode?
I'm very curious to see what the general public thinks, because I liked it. I loved it. I am an old school, like, I spent most of my late teens and 20s reading Tom Clancy spy thrillers, and I feel like a really good Tom Clancy spy thriller, like a Cardinal and the Kremlin type spy thriller, just broke out in the middle of my favorite space show. So I'm super digging it. I like the kind of Ocean's 11 thing that they're going for on Happy Valley between Ilya and Milosh. You know, it's just like, obviously that's going to complicate beyond all reason. I don't know is Lee truly delusional enough that he thinks this guy who smuggles Playboy and vibrators is going to be able to smuggle a whole ass person?
That's insane, but sure.
But I'm very curious just because it's a predicament. It is a predicament that Miles has gotten himself into. But then also, like, you know, we had a lot of we got a lot of things that were answered. This episode is all about complications, you know, except for maybe Ed's plot, which we got a little bit more like, you know, we've been speculating a lot these last few episodes of what's going on with Ed. We got a little bit more information, but mostly it's just like, you know, Elaine and Kelly, things got more complicated. Miles solved one problem, but then things got more complicated. Margot, shit, her life is just it's a Rubik's Goldberg contraption of complications at this point. She's a dead American citizen masquerading as a Canadian citizen, getting passed wrong between directorates of the KGB and the police state. That is I really liked it. What did you make of all this craziness?
It's not my favorite episode of the season, I gotta say that. There were definitely parts I liked, and overall I'm generally positive on it. It's just, I'm not sure I need the Soviet spy thriller in my space show. I feel like maybe an overcomplication. I know they'll bring it back around. It'll be interesting and tied to the space plot here, especially with Margot going to work at Star City. It's gonna get interesting. I don't know. It feels a lot like they really want to get into the politics of it. And of course, I mean, the show, you know, is trying to tell us how we get to the Star Trek future, essentially. These are going to be bumps in the road. There are going to be parts like this. I guess I'm more into the space stuff than I am the spy thriller stuff.
Yeah, and that's the thing that the question I have is, like, where are they going with this? Because if they just want a Margo back in Star City, kind of like dueling with their American counterparts or collaborating with their American counterparts, they could have just had that with the Crisis. You know, the asteroid thing goes up, the Russians are at a loss. You know what? Let's call in Margo and, you know, have her kind of work her way up Star City. I don't know what we need but also, they're trying to, like, realistically move the pieces of the geopolitical puzzle. And that's some of the things we've really liked about the show. And, you know, one of the things we said is like, oh, I wish we had more insight into what's going on in Russia. And well, here it is. But that's what I'm saying. Like, I think you're the average For All Mankind person who's like, I just want to see NASA solve problems and expand human spaceflight. And I don't need to see a middle-aged woman chained up in a Russian dungeon for a whole episode. But
yeah, and I don't know why it's hitting me different than a lot of the stuff with, like, Ellen last season did, because that was, you know, only tangentially related to the space stuff at all. So, like, they've been doing this all along. This plot just seems to be, it doesn't interest me as much. I don't know why. Because I know it's going to come back, right? All these complications with the Soviet Union are going to find their way to Mars. Certainly. They're already starting to with the lack of communication.
Yeah. And I think that there was this word, I forget, I'll probably come across my notes. I'm trying to scan for it, but you know, this thing that Ilya is trying to impress upon Miles, the Russian way, right?
The philosophy, yeah.
It's about if you look it up and see what he's talking about, it's this word for like connection, or hooking up. And I wonder if like they're trying to make some larger point about how this is all about connections that you make with people. Like how has this person been watching Margo for so long, and for what purpose? How long have they been planning this coup?
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, I know it's going to connect back, but I guess while I'm waiting for it to connect, I'm more entertained just by, you know, seeing the machines of Soviet state turn over, you know?
Gotcha. Yeah.
No, it's always a bad sign. Totally it's like, it's always a bad sign when the man with the bigger, funnier hat shows up and starts screaming at the guy who just was interrogating you. And then yeah. When a guy with even bigger, funnier hat shows up, oh my God, it's... I like it, and all the first war between the second and third directorate. It's just like I said. I find that stuff hugely entertaining, and it's interesting to see Cold War politics in a post Cold War, broadly speaking, geopolitical context.
And it's kind of a resolution to the things they've been teasing with the political stuff, right? Like they managed to get in and out of that plot in record time, I think. You know, if you're not interested in that stuff at all, the politics of it, then three episodes that barely deal with it at all, that's not a lot of time to spend on something as big as a coup event.
It does seem like this season's all about contradictions too, like, you know, the uneasy alliance between communism and capitalism. Surely Ed is going to flip his fucking gasket when he finds out that there's an illegal, you know, black market operation on the base, and yet he is running an illegal black market operation on the base. And there's a lot of that kind of interesting juxtaposition of, you know, extremes of ideology and hypocrisy and whatnot. And I think that is every bit as fascinating as the space stuff, although I admit didn't get a lot of space stuff. Other than Svetlana expertly docking the asteroid rig, that's about the only space stuff we got this episode.
Yeah, not a lot of it. Although the thing that interests me the most is the thing that's happening with Dev and Kelly and Aleda. I'm really excited to see how that turns out, because I feel like they've just Frankenstein style resurrected a monster.
They really have. Yeah. Yeah, with Aleda and Kelly's faces at the end of when they see Dev flip the switch from, hey, you know, the problem with Icarus is you need better wings, to you get the axe and you get the axe and you get the axe, and the blood is flowing through the corridors. They're like, oh, you don't know about this.
Yeah, I think Dev saw an opportunity in Aleda and Kelly's program and seized upon it.
And I'm kind of biased against Dev after last season's stuff. Like, you know, he talks about Karen backstabbing, but like, that's just because he is so fucking blind to his own flaws and his own prejudices and his own ways of looking at people and dealing with things. It's a very Dev-centric worldview he's got, which is funny for a guy whose company's called Helios, but the whole universe revolves around Dev, not the sun. But yeah,
last episode I was like spinning out some theories about, oh, is, you know, Richard actually the money grubbing asshole? Well, maybe it's hard to tell from this episode, because he does come in and fire a bunch of people, but it seemed like personal spite rather than something that they were doing with the company that was backward.
Or they just didn't believe in his vision. Maybe they're more sober, prudent financial advisors, and he doesn't need any of that in his company. Thank you very much.
I mean, he doesn't need finance at all. If he has $200 billion or whatever. I don't know. That stuff is super interesting. So overall, I like the episode. Just, I hope we're definitely not done with the spy stuff. Definitely not done, but we'll see how much of it's in there. You're listening to Hi Bob. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV+, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Hi, Bob. Welcome back to more For All Mankind. All right, why don't we get into the recap?
Yeah, let's do it.
We start off with Margo being transported along with other prisoners to some Russian facility. We don't really know what it is yet, but we'll find out soon.
Yeah, she finds out from the newspaper stand that the police are backing the new hardliner. You know, there's essentially a Cold War civil war, a cold civil war breaking out in the country itself. You've got various factions of the government fighting each other. Yeah. And Margo is a pawn, literally a pawn in their game.
Yeah. I'm not sure if she's actually an important pawn or if she just is caught up in something way bigger than her and is insignificant, but we'll find out more. I think, once she starts talking with the spy operative, things start to open up a bit.
Yeah.
And there's a Soviet crisis that we see on television. This being reported on the news, both to, you know, other countries and also to Happy Valley here. The attempted coup by Korshenko. He's trying to restore the Soviet Union to communism. And Happy Valley gets that news, and Star City apparently is not communicating at all with Happy Valley, or even their own fathers are unable to get messages to them. And Danielle decides, you know what, let's give Russian messages comms priority, and they proceed with their mission, which is an asteroid capture training mission.
Again, no notes on Danny, perfect leadership. It even defers to the Russians about whether, you know, it's like, hey, your whole country's on fire. Do you still want to fuck around with the asteroids? Yeah, we kind of do. All right, thanks.
No notes on Ed either. She diverts comms to the Russians here, and he's like, done.
Yeah, I will say that Ed, yeah, like, this is a crisis that he can wrap his brain around and make sense to him. And it's like, well, of course. Mm-hmm. So, well, it's not some dirty miners
complaining about pay.
It's the shit that Ed doesn't agree with that you got to watch him going rogue on.
Right. And he has kind of a moment here with, is it Svetlana? Where he looks over at her and he's like, I know what that's like, not being able to communicate with your family.
Yeah, there's a thing there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see it come more into focus later. Then we go over to Dev for the first time this season. He's laying on a beach at night, and a surfer comes up, calls him a fascist pig when he tells her not to surf on his property, because he owns the ocean, apparently.
I fucking hate this about America. Whenever I read about UK and Scotland and the Scandinavian countries, where there's essentially a right to roam, where it's like, if you know, you can have private property, you can fence in your backyard, but if you live on 50 acres that's forested, then you might have people camping back there. And as long as they're not tearing shit up or molesting things or causing you problems, then that's just, hey, it's the land, man.
Yeah.
And the idea that people can buy up beaches and like, like I said, I'm not advocating for people to just free use your property. But, you know, the right to travel and cross and enjoy natural, that's just something I can't get behind. And fuck that.
A lot of times, I think it's the case that you can't actually buy beach. What you can buy is the land that lines the beach. And so you can turn that into your private property, and it's illegal to trespass across that to get to the beach that is public property. This happens with hunting stuff all the time, too, where there will be lands that you can hunt on, but they're surrounded by private property that is fenced off, and they're specifically trying to keep you out of that other property so they can use it as their personal backyard.
Yeah, no, I follow a couple of social media sites that track this, where it's like a wealthy person buys a what they think is a private beach and finds out there's actually public beach access there. And then since they have a lot of money, they will cut down the sign that says public access. They will plant shrubs over that path. And then anyone that tries to use it, they will run off and threaten legal action. And essentially they turn, even though that's illegal, they turn it into a private beach, and no one, like, this is happening all over the place, especially in California, especially in Florida. And it's a crime. It is stealing from the public and putting it into private hands. And it's like, you know, it's not the kind of like crime where it's like you slip the city $1 million. It's like they just do it. They just do it because, it's gross. It drives me crazy. And Dev is, I don't know if he's a fascist pig, but I'm comfortable with a surfer girl calling him that under these circumstances.
Yeah. And, you know, this is where he starts in the episode. And I don't know if I'm to believe that he's had some kind of epiphany and change of heart by the end. That seems a little sudden. That seems a little not Dev to me. But that's what the episode is trying to tell us.
He might have had an epiphany, but it's going to be more along the lines of, I've been right all along, and I need to stop. I need to stop doubting myself and get back into the game. Not like, hey, I should maybe think of other people.
It's, oh no, I'm not going to give up like my father. I'm actually going to keep fighting for this thing that I want, which is very selfish. His motivations are definitely not pure on this, but we'll see how it goes. So far, so bad, I guess. And boy, the security at his place. I don't know if this is because of the bombing, if he's afraid of terrorist actions against him, or if this is just a general response to feeling like people are out to get him, the backstabbing from Karen that he got, you know, in his mind, which he's blown up to be a huge thing. I don't know what the state is, but boy, that's a lot of security.
Yeah, and I bet that he probably isn't a very popular person in America, with, you know, him being the face of the company that essentially destroyed the petroleum industry, put a lot of people out of work. You know, we saw how people are willing to blow up space centers last year or last season over that. So I imagine there is a fair bit of concern for his personal safety, but mostly just feels like they're telling a story that he has walled himself off from the world.
Yeah,
there's a lot of that going on in this episode. Yeah,
for sure. So Leda and Kelly go to, I don't know, I guess Silicon Valley. They're pitching everybody on their new robotics project, the Mars Seeker, which is designed to find life on Mars. They get rejected by everyone, and Leda says, "You know what? There's one last rich person we could go see."
How tortured an acronym on a scale of like SCUBA, which I don't think is a tortured acronym at all, to Humvee. Where are we at with Seeker?
What is the full name of this? I didn't pick it up.
It's like the search for extraterrestrial something, or is that search for extraterrestrial life enhanced with kinematic something robotics. The word kinematic is doing all of the fucking work in this acronym.
No one, because
they had seer right there. Seer, like a prophet, a person divining for things, searching for, like, I don't know, like, you got to throw kinematic in there just to get a,
it's a buzzword, man. That's a hype word. That's a word that gets investors interested.
It's the study of the geometry of motion.
The motion of life. I don't know. I'm seeing them go into these companies, and every company is giving them like what I view as a bullshit excuse for why they can't do. Oh, it doesn't fit into our existing slate of projects. Oh, whatever. They just don't see the ROI in it. Like, at least Dev, when they go to him, is like, no, there's no ROI in this for me. That's why I spend my money, to get an ROI.
doesn't make dollars. It doesn't make sense. Get the hell out. Mm-hmm. I do like how tightly connected this is to the previous scene where the surfer girl is talking about the universe sending him a message. And he's like, the universe doesn't send messages, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, he's about to receive, mm-hmm. like, this message from the universe. I think it's kind of neat how they primed the pump there with the surfer girl.
Nice. All right, let's go up to Miles in Happy Valley. He's watching more messages from his family. His wife's thinking about moving the family to Boise for a job opportunity, which I don't know. What's a few thousand more miles? What's a couple thousand more miles in the grand scheme of things, right?
Which is further from civilization, Boise, Idaho, or Happy Valley, Mars?
Ooh, I'd need my measuring tape for that one.
And there's distance, and then there's, you know, but I mean, shit, I'm from the Midwest. How?
yeah, plenty of people are saying that about Ohio.
Yeah, Samantha... it's like, is it better to be known for corn or potatoes? I don't know.
Yeah, Samantha's not getting any messages from anyone back home, so they both go out to drown their sorrows at Ilya's. We'll get to the Ilya scene here in a second. Apparently Miles is not making even enough money to support his family. His bank account's draining at like $1,000 a month, which is pretty significant.
Yeah. I was thinking that because
surely
she said
they're not still living at her parents' place, right?
I have no idea. I don't know why she would have moved in like, what, 3 months we're talking here? With the anticipation, like, what, she'd bought a new house on the supposed pay. I don't know. And, like, when does he start getting paid? Did he start getting paid, like, the moment he landed? Or was he getting paid for the commute?
I hope so. My God. That's not that's not a regular commute. But, yeah, let's go over to Ilya's. This is a fun scene. Miles is interested in how much Ilya makes on his operation because he needs some money. And he chats about how shitty Helios is with Ilya, who tells him the story of how he became the businessman that he is. And Miles asks if he needs any help, but Ilya says he works alone. And then Samantha comes up and shows Ilya Miles' green badge, which gives him access to areas of the base that Ilya doesn't have access to. And that changes his mind.
I thought it was because, like, the first time I was watching this, I was thinking to myself, are they moving too fast with this? They're trying to establish Ilya as this very careful, cautious person who's been building up his empire slowly over 15 years. And then when it became clear that this was what's going to happen, I'm like, do I buy that he's just going to, like, take Miles under his wing this quickly? But I think they got with Sam pointing out the green card that, like, Ilya's greed and ambition mm-hmm. got the better of him a little bit, because ultimately I think this is going to be his undoing, you know, this whole North Korea thing. Just I don't know how.
Yeah,
but
I was looking at this from several angles, and before it became clear that he was going to get the job and the situation with the North Koreans presented it itself, I was thinking, I'm really going to hate Miles when he blows up Ilya's spot to try and take over his business. Because that's what I thought was going to happen, is there was going to be some, you know, he'd get involved, he'd see with the operation, and then he'd turn state's evidence here and, is throw Ilya under the bus to take over his operation because he really needs the money.
Yeah. I kind of thought that too, that there would be, like, he would try to do what Ilya does and Ilya would, like, shut him down in some kind of, like, rough and ready kind of, you know, black market mm-hmm. kind of way.
Which I'm glad that didn't happen, because I like Miles. I like Miles being stupid more than I like Miles being an asshole, I guess.
Yeah. And I also, I think it's going to be interesting if they do have, like, essentially a criminal, because, like, the thing is, a criminal enterprise can work fine as long as there's no competition. The second there's competition, there's no way to settle that competition legally. So, mm-hmm. you know, kneecaps are getting broke, and then ribs, and then heads, and then knives and guns come out. And I'm really curious to see if they go full Russian mafia you know, versus North Korean mafia versus Miles mafia, like if they're, you know, going to go to the mattresses on Mars kind of.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like that's the way they're going. It feels more like the complication
inevitable.
Is going to be getting them. Yeah. It's just, are they going to tell
like,
that story?
Might not be this generation, but it'd be interesting to have like a Martian underbelly underground for like future seasons to play around with, you know?
That's what I was thinking. I mean, honestly, Ilya is getting in on the ground floor of the Martian economy. Like, he's taking scrip, which I think has a potential to become the official currency of Mars. I don't mm-hmm. know why they wouldn't necessarily want that to be the case. Mm-hmm. And he's got a lot of it, and he's got the connections on Mars. He's the guy who gives everybody everything they need. He could turn this into a full-blown enterprise on Mars. Like, yeah. He could be who's the French guy in The Expanse. I know he's from Earth, but like if he were from the belt, right?
Jean-Pierre Meow.
Yes, Meow. he could be that dude in, you know, not in his lifetime, obviously, but his kids or something, you know, whoever he passes this on to.
A lot of the founding fathers in America were smugglers. Like, sure. That's one of the reasons, like, I've understood that one of the big reasons about the whole Boston Harbor and the tea and all that kind of stuff is it was pissing them off to have the British start muscling in on some of their illicit trade of things.
Nice.
So it's like, yeah, a lot of times like you said, those people that are getting in there and doing the work and cutting the corners and amassing the wealth, they're going to be a big part of the, Ilya might be the governor next season of Mars.
They get legitimized far more easily than you would think.
Yeah. Yeah, money and power have a way of legitimizing whatever they need mm-hmm. to.
Yeah, we'll just see if it survives Miles and Ilya's entanglement here, the North Koreans. So Ilya teaches Miles the ropes of smuggling. He takes him around, shows him his operation, teaches him how to schmooze, his philosophy. I forget the word that you said there, but that Russian philosophy of communication or connection, rather.
It's Svyazi, Svyazi. I looked it up. It Svyazi. Literally means connection. A lot of times it can be used to like talk about communication. I saw that there's like a messaging app in Russia is called Svyazi. There's a marketing firm called Svyazi, but like colloquially, it's like the hookup.
Gotcha.
The connect.
Yeah.
You know.
Hey man, I got that Svyazi.
You're right. Right. So it's
you,
the
you need some.
And the thing is like every time Ilya was saying like nothing's for free, everything's free, but I kept on wait like I thought like Ilya was a little naive that Miles is helping.
Mhm.
And of course he's getting paid for it, but like I feel like Ilya's getting into stuff that he doesn't understand at the same rate that Miles is too.
It felt like it to me, yeah. I felt this was the point where I was really worried that Miles was learning all this so he could just overthrow Ilya and take over his empire.
This scene is where Ilya's at the kind of coaching his smile, not too big, not too small. You just want to make people feel at home, glad hand him. Miles has resting Sly Stallone face.
Okay.
You look at next time you watch Miles, you see his smile, you see the way his eyes work, all that stuff. It's I mean, he's very close to.
Yeah. Yeah, if he had a bunch more muscle on him, his face would probably look a lot like Sly.
Yeah, you know, Ilya, I got this North Korean guy. He's going to, you know, yeah, he's the big Stallone face.
Right. I was fascinated by the things that were coming to the station. There's Game Boy Advance, which I liked. There's shampoo, there's razors. There's tampons, there's socks, there's underwear, all the things that Samantha was telling us about. And some more base desires are being satisfied by the things coming in. The Penthouse magazines, the personal massagers,
the 1,000-watt neck massager.
I found that pretty interesting. They import a lot of vibrators up there.
I bet.
Yeah.
I wonder if they put birth control in the water up there. Like, how do they control? Like, how do they keep the bored poor miners from just fucking all the time? And
yeah,
like I can't imagine Helios is super cool with babies on base. They're literally just mouths to feed for like 18 plus years.
Maybe it's in your contract. If you
have a baby, you get shipped home.
Father or mother a child. Yeah, you get shipped home. You owe $150,000.
I mean, see, as Mars is like a month trip. I guess they could just take a pregnant mother and ship her back. But like, yeah, make her pay for it too. Oof.
Wouldn't surprise me, given the contract I've seen. I noticed another thing in here that was kind of funny. Miles is up there trading with the same guy who last episode told him to clean his toilets. And the guy thanks him. You know, suddenly he's looking him in the eye. Suddenly he's a person.
Yeah. Very interesting. I think we mentioned this. We talked about the Ocean's 11 vibe, but like literally they're aping the like casino walkthrough scenes where like,
oh, the you music know,
Rusty
and
Danny are explaining how everything works and you see how, you know, he's just, and it's not like he doesn't have a special smuggling compartment. What he's got is a guy on Earth who takes an order, throws a couple extra grams in the crate. Mm-hmm. And then he's got a person on Mars that lets him open up the cases and handpick the stuff on top. And there you go. Easy peasy.
Yeah, this is exactly how it worked in The Expanse. This is exactly how it works in real life a lot of the time.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah,
you have somebody at the docks who okays the package or lets you in to get your stuff out before the stuff gets inspected. And that's how it works. Let's go over to Ed and Svetlana running a docking mission here. Ed's hand is shaky on the controls, so he hands control over to Svetlana. She completes the dock without issue. He's still hiding it currently, but he won't be for long.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting because a lot of people clocked some of the Ed stuff as a signs of Parkinson's. Like there was one Rob from Versailles, sure. Or if he's from the Midwest like us, Versailles maybe. He says, I noticed one thing during the Danny Ed scene concerning them eating pasta. During Ed's boomer speech about how the maintenance workers should just be happy to be there, the camera shows him aggressively cutting up his noodles a couple of times and then scooping up forkfuls. In comparison, Danny is effortlessly twirling the noodles around her fork before taking a bite. He says one of the symptoms of Parkinson's is shaking hands with the loss of dexterity, causing patients to cut up their food more than usual in order to make up for the loss in fine motor skills. Obviously, this has already come, like they haven't named it Parkinson's because apparently I think Ed's afraid to get it checked out because he's afraid the flight surgeon's going to like ground them. But kudos to, there's like three people that were calling out Parkinson's this week. Rob's the first one, but yeah, it looks like he is suffering and it probably did impact the asteroid mission. I think they're telling us that at least Ed is worried that it might have.
Yeah. Yeah. Am I wrong to think that I remember Ed being pretty unsophisticated in the way he eats spaghetti on Earth? Was he not the guy who cut up his pasta?
Was that it, or was it? Because I remember one of the things is he likes the powdered. He likes the powdered Parmesan. He doesn't like the fresh ground. Yeah. He likes the cheese.
Okay, maybe he knows how to eat it, but yeah. Definitely, at this point, they're telling us there's something very wrong with Ed's nervous system. We'll see how that progresses because it seems like it's progressing pretty quickly. I would say it's definitely worse this episode than it was in previous episodes. But I don't know if that's
just seeing it.
It's worse right now because it's worse.
Yeah. But I mean, if it is Parkinson's, that is a degenerative disorder. So like it will progress.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Margo is taken to an interrogation room and asked about the phone number on the card in her purse, which apparently belongs to government loyalist KGB agent. Or at least that's what she's told here. He threatens her, but before they can finish their conversation, an emergency breaks out at the prison and the guard leaves to go deal with it. There's shooting. It's pretty serious.
I like how this scene works because when the first shot went off, I thought it was like someone being executed in prison and it was kind of like an exclamation point for, and I think that's how Margo took it. Mm-hmm. But then when the lieutenant kind of looked startled and then, you know, seconds later, that first shot became more and then more
machine
and then
guns
running
firing,
and screaming.
Yeah.
And it's like, and I was like, is someone launching a commando raid to save Margo?
Sure. Yeah.
Because they did it last Sergei. Year for Sergei. Yeah, like, yeah, they got SEAL Team 6 on the ground. What the hell is
He's
happening?
He's going to bust in shirtless with a bandana tied around his head and a machine gun. Be like, yeah. I paid you back. We're even.
That's right. That's right. But yeah, I was really like, what the hell is going on?
I love the first, speaking of the first shot of this scene is great. It's of the drain in the floor in this room. You mm-hmm. never want to go into, especially a Russian room with a drain in the floor. The entire room with a drain in the floor.
Interrogation room with all steel furniture and a big drain in the middle is not, it's probably not a good sign.
No. No, it's not. So yeah, it really started with the ominous stuff there. And it's just gonna get worse throughout this episode.
I know I said a lot of times that if Margo had only gone to the KGB, none of this would have ever happened. I wonder what would happen if she had now, because
which part of the KGB?
Yeah, looks like there's beef between the second and third directorates. The third directorate is their counterintelligence program, like military counter spy, and the second directorate is the ones that watch the internal. You know, they're like the FBI with secret police mixed up. They're like watching the other Soviet citizens to make sure they're ideologically pure and not betraying the motherland. Regardless, how stupid is Margo for keeping this card on her? Like, this is the kind of thing that someone gives it to yeah. you and then you're not going to take it to the KGB. You take it home and you put it behind your piano. You tuck it in a book that no one's ever going to read. You hide it in a register. You tape it to the underside of a desk drawer. Like some fucking basic spycraft. She's just walking around with a get into jail, betrayed a mother, motherland. Well, like, that would be the ultimate thing.
Come
yeah.
on, you're telling me she can't memorize a string of 10 numbers or whatever it is? Like,
I think Margo can handle
that. She worked
at
NASA, for God's sake.
I would struggle, but I think she could. But it's just anything besides just keeping the betray the motherland, go directly to jail, do not get $200, do not pass go. Don't keep that card in your wallet. Come on.
I think the show was trying to tell us that she couldn't leave it in her apartment because she really thought like she was being watched and followed and bugged, and that if she left it in her apartment and went out to get the news yeah. or whatever, they would break into her apartment and find it.
Yeah. I'm
but
sure they I mean
also having it on you is not a solution either. So
I wonder if she'd even be in this position if she didn't have the card on her. That's the thing. It's like I think she'd just be yeah. treated as like this kind of curiosity. And but I mean, this is a chilling scene too, because this is, you know, at this stage, I think some people have some rose-colored glasses on how the Soviet Union was and how it operated. And look, I've looked into matter. I think there are some good things about the Soviet Union that I think we could probably emulate. But holy shit, this police state stuff where they can just invent crimes after the fact and persecute, disappear you, shoot you in the head, charge your family for the bullet, ship you off to a labor camp. And, you know, like, I get it that there's you can get fucked in similar ways in America if you're in a particular class or doing particular crimes, but this is on a whole other fucking level. This is just
yeah, at least collectively we can do something about it, you know. That's the thing, that like the government of your country has the ultimate power over you. You want it to be accountable to someone, namely yeah. you.
And no one, that's the other thing, is no one is ever safe. Like even the president of the fucking country can be deposed and executed. Like there is mm-hmm. It's just the politics of power all the time on steroids, and it's frightening. Like this is like the in the same kind of way of like the horror of being involuntarily committed to a mental hospital, except for people can beat, torture, and put a bullet in your brain. It's just I was the first time watching this, I was extremely stressed out.
Oh yeah, I mean in these scenes she's terrified and powerless, and it comes through in her yeah. performance and just the way it's filmed. I definitely felt that.
Yeah, like Rambo would be powerless and helpless in this situation, but like when you see Margo mm-hmm. and I think they did a really great job of showing like how old she is and how frail she's become and how she's got a, you know, a wrist brace and she's walking with a limp, and every time the soldiers wrench her or chain her to something and she's screaming like, "Oh god, it was a lot." It was a lot.
Yeah.
T-minus 3 seconds until the ad.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and ball move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of bald movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Touchdown, and we're back.
Yep, felt pretty bad for her.
Yeah, keep your police state. I would like free healthcare, but you can keep the police state.
Yeah. So, let's go to the post-docking mission. Svetlana's side is hurting her, and it's been hurting her, and the meds she's getting aren't helping. So Ed says, you know what? Come by my garden later tonight.
I wanted to have time to rewatch the Chrono scenes. I didn't. I rewatched some season three stuff instead. But I was curious of how Svetlana got so badly hurt when Ed, who's 70 years old, sitting right beside her, no bubbles, no troubles. I wasn't sure if she got up during a maneuver or something. I can't remember, but... Yeah, apparently she really hurt herself during the Chronos disaster.
I wonder if it was before the disaster. Maybe it was the like putting the pins into the asteroid or something. Did she say it was during
She says my side's been hurting since the Chronos mission. So
yeah, I wonder
right.
if she just like tweaked her back while she was, you know, inserting those mounts into the asteroid using the heavy machinery to do that.
Because I thought she was the co-pilot. I didn't think she was out there spacewalking.
I thought she was out there with, is it Parker? The guy who died.
Sam was out with Parker. Samantha was out there with Parker.
Yeah, isn't... Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
I'm confusing the two.
But it did get pretty violent. I mean, that ship was shaking and twisting and that...
Yeah, but... I don't know.
Sometimes shortcuts are taken on this show. Sometimes.
Were they at zero G? Because Ed cuts the engines at some point. I thought they had to have been at zero G at some point, right?
Yeah. But I'm assuming it's when everything is shaking violently. Because that was like, you know, like one of those big antenna mounts. And it's just kind of like bobbling back. Like that's what the Ranger looked like at the end of that asteroid. It was just kind of, but still. Yeah.
Yeah, somehow she got hurt.
She's got a glass hit. Got the cure. Svetlana. Svetlana. Is that her name or Svetlana?
Svetlana.
Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if the L's are pronounced as Y's over there.
That's how everybody was pronouncing it. I don't ever hear her pronounce her name. So maybe that's an Americanization of her name.
Did Ed bust out Sveti on her?
Maybe.
I think he did when he offered her, it's like, hey, I think he said Sveti, you've been, or no, Sveta. He called her Sveta.
Sure.
That's like a nickname when he flipped the keys to the Ranger to her.
All right, let's go back to Earth real quick. Aleda and Kelly show up at Dev's house to pitch him on Seeker. He wants to know about the ROI. Kelly says, well, I don't know. There could be unknown advancements in biotechnology based on what we find. Dev's like, nah, that's bullshit. Turns him down. And Kelly tells Dev the hard truth that he's no longer the optimistic visionary that her mother told her about. And Dev responds by saying, well, yeah, your mother made me that way after she stabbed me in the back. And then they leave.
And again, I think this is a highly self-serving way to look at the Karen takeover.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Karen didn't want to stab Dev in the back. It was happening regardless, and she was the person who got put in his position.
And partially as a result of Dev multiply stabbing people in the back and going back on his word and, you know, declaring the democracy over and being a dictator. But that's kind of Dev's thing. You know, Dev makes a great first impression, and the more you hear him talk, the more you're like, oh boy, I want to back out of this deal.
I mean, I understand why he feels this way. Like, if you're being ousted from the company that you've co-founded and somebody is being put in your place, of course you'd be mad at them for taking that job, right? I get it, especially when you were personal friends at that point. At least, you know, they had some disagreements, but they were friends.
But the difference between him and like a true, like a Michael Corleone, you know, like a real pragmatist looking at the chessboard, moving pieces coolly, is like he has no self-awareness of how his own moves are impacting the board.
Sure.
And that's, if you're wanting to make power moves, when you're playing chess, you can't just play your own game. You got to see what the other guy's doing and what responses they're making. And I think that's Dev's weakness, is he doesn't ever account for that stuff.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he's an egotistic visionary. That's kind of his personality, right? He does not think about other people and how his actions are going to affect them. And he's got a particular vision for a thing, and that is what they're going to do regardless. And, you know, he can give all the votes he wants to the people under him, but if they vote the way he doesn't want them to vote, he's just going to find another way to get them to vote his way.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the kind of guy he is.
Yeah. And then what's his plan for when people head him off at that pass?
Right. Seemingly didn't have a plan. He had to have one dropped in his lap in this episode.
It's to wall yourself off the coast of California and mope. Mope for a decade. Mope for a decade
and day
trade.
Go to New Zealand. Honestly.
Yeah, it's not far enough away for people. Or the moon. Like, why is Dev not living on the moon in like a billionaire penthouse condo? Or Mars?
Because then Aleda... Well, I mean, they have hotels on the moon now. So Aleda and Kelly could have gone to the moon to speak to him. Yeah, he should
have
been.
Although, I
got to
say, if you are wanting... If just for pure creature comfort, you can't beat Earth.
Yeah, nothing... You're not going to have an ocean you can go swim in.
You don't have a fucking Pacific Ocean on Mars, right?
I'm going to lay out under the stars and breathe the fresh night air on Mars.
Yeah.
Let's go back to Ed. Let's go back up to Happy Valley, where Ed shows Svetlana his strawberries, which remind him of Karen. Apparently, they remind Svetlana of her father, who she used to garden with as a child. And this is, you know, poignant because she's unable to speak to him currently, given the situation in the Soviet Union. Ed gives her some of the weed from his secret grow-op, and she asks him why he smokes, and he shows her his shaky hand.
It'd be funny if he just turned off the lights and turned on a black light with like a mushroom poster. It's like, this is why I smoke.
You were right, man. You called it last episode. We were talking about whether that was a dupe or a cigarette or whatever.
Secret grow-op,
old man Ed here, smuggling seeds up.
Yeah, I was laughing, and my son Jack was like, what? It's like, me and Uncle Jim have been joking about Ed's grow-op this whole season, and I'll be damned if he doesn't have one. And it's far more elaborate than I would have thought. Like, it's got a secret panel. I do wonder how he's keeping the odor. Like, I feel like you would open that door and like Bob Marley music would roll out. Like, it's like the
well,
like,
it's
there's
in
not
a
enough
fish
tomato
tank.
And strawberry.
I feel like he's just blowing it out to Mars, right? Like there's a direct connection outside to Mars from this tank. He's just venting it all out onto the surface of the planet.
I bet it's
they're
going
to go to terraform Mars, and they're going
to
realize, oh my God, the atmosphere is 40% THC. What are we? How do we fix this?
It's a weed. It'll literally grow up anything. It turns out it doesn't even need oxygen or atmospheric pressure. It's out of control.
Yeah, it's going to be like V'ger. There's going to be a big smoke cloud that comes back to Earth looking for its father or something.
I need you to validate my calibrators here, or calibrate my sensors, because I'm a degenerate shipper. I see people that have any excuse to have a love connection, and I just fucking want to make it, because why not? You get any of that here between Sveta and Eddie?
Yes, and it's
especially
weird.
Teed off with the previous scene, the way she's like, uh-huh. Why would I meet you at the garden at night? Because I asked you to. It's like, well, then how can I say? There's something flirty there.
Yep. I don't like it because it's also mixed up with the daddy stuff. Gardening reminds you of working in the garden with your father.
Oh,
huh?
Shit.
Old man Ed. And now you're rubbing down his fingers. I'm not so sure
that's
about
where
this
it starts,
one, man.
Rubbing finger rub downs, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I didn't see this coming either. But it's interesting, yeah, and it's like, is he seeing her as like a Karen? Because like the way they're both kind of talking about their losses and who they're missing, yeah, and thinking about as a dove's tail. And again, they're both adults. I don't think there's like an age, like the age gap when one person's 40 and the other person's like 70, you know, like surely the 40 year old's got their eyes wide open.
Is Ed supposed to be 50 or 65? I really can't
tell. I think
he's
supposed to be, yeah, late 60s, early 70s. If you assume that he was in his like late 20s and season one.
Pepper in his hair for 70, but
he's got good genetics, man. Got good genes. He's got mostly a full head of hair. You know, that forehead's turned into a bit of a five head, but it's holding on. Maybe the lack of gravity, the hair, it doesn't pull at the hair follicles as strong. So,
yeah, it doesn't smack me as particularly egregious as far as an age gap goes, though. I could be just completely misjudging his age.
It does seem like it's a complication, though, because you've got senior people in the command staff who are from separate governments who might be splitting or having more of a hardliner stance starting like this, you know, what, September, December love affair right sure. under Danny's watch. Or maybe he's just smoking her up. I don't know. But I definitely got sparks flying.
Yeah, I did, too. I'm a little worried about it. We'll see how that progresses. We'll see which progresses faster, their romance or his degenerative disease.
My degenerate shipping. All right. Nice to know my sensors are properly calibrated.
Yep. I like that Wayne was the one to give him the seeds.
Of course it was, too.
Right.
I said that, too. It's like, you can see how small marijuana seeds are. Test tube will get you a whole fucking crop. And I knew if anybody's going to be Wayne.
Yeah, of course.
Wayne should live on Mars. Wayne should be the gardener.
Yeah. Late at night, Dev's working out and he gets a wild hair to look at the secret proposal. Or at least he looks at the secret proposal's cover and has an idea. He's inspired.
That's the thing. The first time I watched this, I'm like, oh, of course he's, you know, like they lit a fire under his ass. He has been kind of like sunk in his own craptitude for 10 years. He's ready. He's got a fortune. He's ready to make a big, like privately back play. Might like compete with Helios, cause him a Lunas or something. And on second and subsequent watches, it's a lot darker, you know? Mm-hmm.
And they do a good job of setting this up in the episode to where you would think, oh, maybe he's having a change of heart, right? Like Kelly drops a whole bunch of shit on him about his personality and the surfer at the beginning is telling him he's a fascist. Like, there's a lot of people telling him he's heading the wrong direction, and this opportunity drops in his lap. Maybe this is what he needed to change his mind, get out of his funk. But then you watch the final scene with him and you're like, oh no, this is just Dev being Dev.
Lifting heavy weight, no spotter.
Yeah, well, he's got a pad. He's got that foam pad. So if the 200 pounds he's benching does drop on his chest, he'll just bounce right off.
I guess you can shrug your way out of it or something. I just like, man, it seems dangerous.
Oh, it is. Yeah. For sure. A new guard in Margo's cell, a colonel actually, returns and frees her. He brings in the last guard and he starts breaking fingers until the man tells him about the call he made to the phone number. Colonel tells Margo that she was contacted by the people behind the coup and then shoots the guard in the head. And then he chains Margo up and starts asking questions about the woman who gave her the card. It's like, she thinks she's free. She thinks she's getting out. And then suddenly she's right back in it.
Yeah, it's out of the frying pan into the fire. And I didn't quite follow... You know, obviously there's some KGP internal politics, and I don't know who this guy is. The first guy's a police lieutenant. This guy's a colonel in the army, but he could be a colonel in the KGB because they have, like, one of their directorates, I think, is a military arm.
Gotcha.
But they have their own kind of, like, private army for security and whatnot. But he could also just, because he mentioned to her, is like, the army's working to restore Gorbachev to power. But it seems like the police thought it was the third directorate, and he said, no, this goes right to the second directorate, which is the, like I said, the super scary KGB that kind of spies on everybody, including Russian citizens. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't quite sure following, and then, like, when the older guy, the bigger, even funnier hat shows up later, like the bullfinch wrangler, I'm trying to get at. Like, who does she work for?
By the end of the episode.
That's what I'm saying. I watched this a bunch of times and I'm not quite sure. Because that's the thing. It's like things move fast in a coup and you have to make a lot of split second decisions about where your allegiances lie or you're going to get the bullet. And this lieutenant chose wrong. It's not clear to me that the colonel is right or if he, you know, they just lost a power struggle and a more powerful person came. I just don't know. I don't know. Especially since you can't hear their conversations. But
yeah, as I recall reading about this actual coup that happened, it was a semi-successful coup. It was not, they did not overthrow the government and return, you know, Soviet Union and communism, but they did reach a fairly amenable agreement with them and basically neutered Gorbachev's power. And they have a new president installed, right? So, like, obviously that happened here as well. And I assume, like, whatever agreement they've come to, a lot of the old players in the Gorbachev government are out. Specifically, what's her name who ran the Star City operation? Because now it seems like...
Kortesh, right? That was her name,
yes,
Kortesh?
Yeah. It seems like this woman, Elena or Ilyana, I forget her name, is now running that.
Yeah, but it's just it's who's talking to who and who's rolling in, and the way I love the way this guy refers to, I'm sorry, I got mixed up in our politics, and like just
this
how
is
they're
politics,
trying,
huh?
And yeah, and the like that they're trying to make it legal retrospectively. Like, we just did a coup, and now we're trying to find enough people higher up in the government to put enough pressure on them to say this was a constitutionally approved. So, like, we can all get our ducks in a row and tell the West, no, this was not a coup.
Face.
This is a vote of no confidence that, you know, there's some confusion because things happen quickly, but it's all under control now. And, you know, it's the Emperor Palpatine. I will make it legal, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. This is what I was worried about the entire time with this number and Margo's situation is that she was going to get wrapped up in a situation that had 16 layers to it. And apparently that is exactly what happened. You know, this phone number is not just a phone number by someone who wants to, you know, get her information that she has about NASA. It's far deeper than that. And that's
how
these things go.
how much hearing loss did Margo experience when that colonel whipped out?
It's probably 38 caliber and shot this dude in a 6x6 concrete room.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I can't help but think about that every time that happens on TV.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. The first 5 minutes of the interrogation should have been Margo just been like, what?
I'm speaking your mother tongue. Can't hear you.
Yeah. All I hear is woo.
All right. Let's go back to Happy Valley, where Miles has decided he's taken it upon himself to upgrade Ilya's still. Seems that Ilya's kind of happy about it until it blows out the still, the thermostat on it specifically. So Ilya fires Miles, and apparently it's going to take 2 months to get a new thermostat up there. But they find out there's one in the North Korean area, and Miles thinks he can knock on their door and get it, but his friends won't join him, so he's going to have to go it alone.
My question is, so his roommate Rich here tells him, like, the base has got lots of thermostats, but they're all the new technology type that we switched off of. Mm-hmm. My question is, like, why the fuck is it easier to steal one from North Koreans than retrofitting the still to use the new thermostat?
Yeah, like, I had that same thought.
These are not complicated devices.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, other than it's more dramatic.
Yeah. I do. That's the thing. It's like, I do wonder about the shortcuts that the show, I started noticing the show taking to get the narrative things in season three. And like, it seems like every time they touch on something that I know anything about in mechanical or engineering, it's like, and I wonder like what other things that they're shortcutting that I don't know enough about to know, but maybe fair game. Like, you know, if it's just HVAC guys that are like laughing up their sleeves and rolling their eyes about this, then maybe that's a good work of fiction. But it doesn't feel as crunchy as the earlier seasons.
They could have at the very least addressed that, right, with a line of dialogue. Like, yeah, we could do that, but the parts to make it fit the still would take 3 months to get up here.
Or they're a lot more closely inventoried, like the new stuff. Like, sure. The only reason Ilya was able to get the old one is because it was all thrown out and nobody cared. And now it's like, yeah. But
there's 100 ways to address that with a little bit of dialogue there. They just didn't.
Yeah, which makes me think they don't know. So,
yeah, I mean,
it was the first question I had when
they said, we've got new thermostats. I'm like, okay, can't you make those fit?
Yeah. Yeah, because I watch these guys like take fucking guidance computers from North Korean satellites and shove it into a Martian ascent module and everything works.
I've seen Apollo 13.
Yeah.
Just give them some duct tape. It'll work.
Yeah. You get square CO2 scrubbers and the round CO2 scrubber holes with nothing but duct tape and Jim Lovell's underwear. And Ilya can't get a still to use an old or new thermostat. Come on.
Yeah, you're telling me you can't bust apart some of Sam's vibrator and get that thing working? You could do it. There are enough pieces in that thing.
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, if I go back
to
like
O-rings,
watching the old Moonshiners episodes on Discovery, do you need a thermostat to run a still? I don't think those hillbillies
in
Appalachia digging holes in the ground and brewing hooch, I don't think they had fancy Russian thermostats.
No, you could do it by feel. Like, if you were familiar enough with the process, you could definitely like fudge it and just make it work, but you'd have to babysit it, and I don't know that Ilya has time to babysit the still.
That might be true. See, imagine he has a full-time job, right?
Yeah,
like he's got a reason to be on the bus on the base.
He's well, maybe with the asteroid mining mission not going off, he doesn't have as much to do. Maybe he was going to be on that mission, and
I don't know. Yeah, the other thing is, like, it's kind of crazy that he doesn't have any underlings. Like, he is the big guy running this massive smuggler, and he's also the bartender.
Yeah. Yeah, you would think you'd pay somebody to run the bar.
But, yeah, that's a lot of trust.
So the bar must only be open certain hours, right? Like, you can't just go down there whenever you want and grab a drink.
Oh, I imagine. I mean, real-life bars are open certain hours, so I imagine the Martian base one is too.
Probably. We'll be right back after this spacewalk.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. In, we're diving into more for all mankind. All right, let's talk some more about Miles here. He uses his maintenance access to fake a methane leak in the Korean section of the base, getting the Koreans to evacuate. And he goes into their area and steals their fridge's thermostat. Unfortunately, he gets caught by Lee, and he explains that it's for Ilya still, and Lee lets him keep it in exchange for a favor.
I guess the only problem I have with this is the fact that NASA was so nonchalant about the coolant leak. They're like, oh, there's already Helios Tech there. Just cancel the alarm. It's like, you don't want to call the guy or like call the North Korean side that is experiencing the leak and coordinate? Just a methane leak in the North Korean side.
Our tech's got it.
It's on the other side, the DMZ. I'm actually super impressed that surprised that North Koreans don't have their own technical staff that can like do that.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to abandon your module and let some American in there to fuck with your shit, like, he could install 17 different listening devices in the span if he was actually there to do that instead of like stealing shit from your fridge. So I don't know.
The politics up there must be pretty complicated, right? Like, is this something that the other M7 powers are sort of keeping the North Koreans in check by not allowing them to have a full self-service area of the base up there?
I'd also love to know why North Korean has a base up there. Like, I get that they got their first man on Mars, but like, are they paying? Like, because they had that was 10 people working on that side of the base?
Maybe, if that.
Like, Happy Valley is not a North Korean installation. Like, if they're there, it must be by invitation and with the blessings of the international community. It's like, I wish they would go more into that other than like, oh, it's a DMZ. It's like South Korea, North. Well, no. North Korea, like, lives there. You know, like, it'd be like North Korea coming to, Florida. And then saying, yeah, we want to stay in Florida. We want to.
Yeah, how do they get their vibrators? Florida. How do they get their condoms? You know, how do they get their food?
I didn't see any lady North Koreans on that base.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
You don't have to worry about reproduction then, unless life's going to find a way.
Yeah.
Like Jeff said on Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would like to know more about that too. I hope they get into it. And I have a feeling we're going to be dealing a lot more with the North Koreans here pretty soon.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. That's the other reason I'm a little surprised they're doing this Russian stuff, is I thought as Russia moves closer to the United States, that North Korea was going to be the new kind of like boogeyman, but the new kind of like, but it, nah, it's a weird mishmash of what my expectations were coming in. So I'm curious to see how this all plays out.
Yeah, I mean, my first thought when he goes up and knocks on the door and starts like trying to get them to evacuate, he's going to cause World War III. He's going to cause an international incident here that's going to spiral out of his control. And just because some dumb fuck wanted a thermostat for his still. And I still think that's the way it's headed.
Yeah, it's just, man, you compare like where we're at in like season two, where you had Marines riding ride of the Valkyrie
shooting
on
people in their airlocks
landers.
And shit.
Yeah, rolling up on dudes with M16s and like, this is not the stakes that was.
Nope.
But it still could cost World War III. That's the funny thing.
I know. Yeah, it could pop off at any time. All right, let's go back to Kelly and Aleda getting home and finding Dev in Kelly's living room here. He apologizes to Kelly for his comments about her mother and says that he's decided to help them try to convince some of the stockholders of Helios to take over the company so that they can get the secret program going. And so they decide to divide and conquer here. We'll talk about their Aleda going to Bill here in a second. Pretty convoluted strategy to take over the company, but I think it provides good drama. I'm into it.
Yeah, a couple people pointed out in feedback between this week and last that Kelly should have a small fortune of her own. And I thought about it, I'm like, of course, because we know that Karen was loaded from the hotel buyout. And then she became a partner in Helios. And yeah, she died, but those would absolutely go to her next of kin and confirm this episode. Kelly is kind of loaded. I'm curious about how, you know, because like what they're trying to get to 51%, right? That's the thing. That's the magic number of ownership where you can kind of take things over. So between Dev's personal stake in Helios, the Kelly shares that she inherited from her mom, and then these other, like they said 10, 20 key stakeholders. Apparently Bill's one of them, early guy.
Yeah,
in, 20 in Helios. That they're going to try to, they're going to scrape together 51%+ of the shares and just hostile takeover.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Batman Begins plot.
It's a good plan. I just look at it and I go, it's Dev Iasa. He has, in my opinion, zero interest and zero plans to actually go ahead with the secret program once he takes over his company. What he sees is an opportunity to get his company back.
I think that's probably true. I don't know what assurances.
Because like before, he has no way to get Kelly's shares, right? If he comes to Kelly and says, I want to take my company back, she'd be like, yeah, well, fuck you. Why would I help you do that? But now she wants something. She wants to get in on the secret program, and he's like, I can use this. And I can use the loyalty that people have built up over the years to Kelly and Aleda to get them to sell their shares. And yeah, he's an opportunist, and this is a big opportunity.
And like Dev, his history with me is like he talks a good game about exploration and advancing humanity and all that. And I think he means it. I think he definitely does style himself as an explorer. The problem is he has no principles in how he pursues that. And like there is no like he gets everybody on board with the common exciting goal. And then when the going gets tough and there's tough decisions that have to be made about how they should proceed during this, that, and that, he doesn't get any of that buy-in. He just does whatever he thinks is right, whether that is abandoning people that need rescuing in space, whether it's pushing, you know, priorities and timelines too fast. I do not trust Dev. I do not trust Dev. I don't think the show, I think that, like, I don't think by the end of this episode, I don't think Kelly and Aleda do either.
Yeah, they shouldn't. I mean, the thing that I've learned about Dev this episode is that he feels like human beings, he's a misanthrope at this point, it feels like. He took away from the Karen lesson the idea that he can't trust anyone. And I think that's coming back full force. As soon as he has seized control, you see what he does, right? Everybody who's ever spited him, everybody who's ever done anything against his own egotistic goals, he's now striking them down.
Yeah.
He's taking revenge. And
yeah,
that's the kind of guy Dev is now. And whether it's due just to Karen's betrayal, quote unquote betrayal of him, or it's something that has always been there in his personality, now I think we're going to see it come to the forefront, and it's going to bite Kelly and Elaida like almost immediately. Yeah. I expect next episode of them to go into his office. All right, let's talk about the secret program. And he's like, what program? Get out of here. Leave.
Yeah, that doesn't align with our objectives.
Yeah. Now, I think he probably needs Kelly for her shares still to do some of the maneuvering that he might want to do, because she has a big chunk of them. But I think he's going to be, if that's the case, he's going to be working in the background.
He does have to kind of keep the coalition together.
A little bit, yeah. Because the same thing could happen to him, right? If he's an asshole and 51% of the shareholders go, you're an asshole, we're taking over.
And they don't need the campaign 51%. If it's truly he owns 51% of the company with all the shares together, like Bill could be like, fuck you, Dev. And boom, it goes with his 2% shares, flip it back to the other guy.
Yeah, totally. So we'll see. I'm expecting Dev to do a little placating of Kelly and Elaida while he's consolidating his power within Helios, and then just flipping the switch and saying, yeah, I'm shutting down this program or whatever. Or in the meantime, there's a miraculous breakthrough in the science and he sees the ROI and suddenly he's on board with it.
Counterpoint. Yeah. What if he fully funds? Because it seems like this is kind of pocket change to him, much less Helios. What if he fully funds it to keep them happy and they just have to decide whether they're going to swallow the shittier and shittier things that happen to Helios as a result of him? Because, like, do you think workers' lives are going to improve under Dev stewardship on Mars or get worse? I'm not sure, but I would bet on the latter, the way he's talking by the end of this episode. And how does the NASA folks
because his employees at Helios on Earth seem like they were pretty happy by and large. He treated them pretty well. They're not miners, right? They're people directly working on the software and hardware that he needs to go to Mars. So, like, maybe he's less sympathetic toward peons, but it's yet to be seen how he treats them, I think.
And I think he paid lip service to treating them well. Like, when push comes to shove, he was willing to fuck them over and abandon them and all that kind of stuff. But
yeah. If they made the wrong decision,
it might be a more interesting dramatic scenario to have Kelly and Elaida having to decide whether they want to give up their dream to oppose Dev rather than Dev just must instantly betray them for no good reason. Sure. Like, here's the knife that your mother stuck in my back, Kelly. You can have it back. You know, like.
And then at some point, Elaida goes, you know what? I bet we'd have more luck in the public sector. Let's take this idea to NASA. And suddenly they're back in their old position, because that seems to be how it goes.
Mm-hmm. Gotta go see the wet bandit again.
Yeah. All right. Elaida approaches Bill with her Helios proposal. And Bill says he'll do it, but he wants to know why she would walk away from NASA for this. And she explains what's been going on in her head for the last 8 years. And she invites him to come back to work with her, but he says he's never coming back. Boy, both of these characters.
I watched the finale episode of last year, and I had to do some fair scanning because that's like an hour and a half episode. I didn't see, and I looked specifically where Margo is addressing the Space Center, the Mission Operations Control Room for the last time before she walks out. And I thought, surely they'd pan over his face if he was there. And I also looked at all the disaster, like, you know, all of... God damn it! Who is the blind lady?
Margo. Sorry, Molly Cobb.
Molly mm-hmm. Cobb. Molly Cobb leading people out, and he wasn't there. It would make sense for him to. I don't think they're cheating if it turns out Bill was there.
Possibly.
But I think they're establishing, because the way he talks about the burning plastic and stuff, like that's someone that's talking about a shared trauma.
Yeah,
you know?
I think so.
So I think he got injured in the blast enough to put him in a wheelchair.
It seems like it, yeah. And he's been pretty salty about it. I mean, he's He's clearly angry. You know, he says he's not angry at Aleta, but he's angry.
How would you not be if you got blown up by a bunch of economic terrorists, and you lose your legs, and you're already the piss baby at NASA, and you finally got what you thought you deserved, Helios, and now, you know, and like, it's funny because he's kind of doing my dream. Have plenty of money, just sitting building models.
Dude, I saw his house, I'm like, this is the house I want.
Yeah, I'm like, Bill's a goddamn Chad. He's got life figured out if he could just get over the anger.
And I love that line when Aleta's, you know, explaining how her life has been falling apart, right? And she can't do manned space travel anymore, and she walked out of the room. Like, she left her post. And Bill's like, at least you didn't pee your pants.
I was wondering if they would reference that. But, you know, that's what makes Bill the hero, right? He stayed at his post even though his bladder burst.
Yes, that's the thing, right? Like, and then he got just shit on for it.
Yeah.
Like, he did the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's why I felt so bad for Bill.
I guess that is traumatic, but not, like, getting blown up traumatic, which he also experienced, apparently. But I thought this was real good because, like, this is, I guess, the third step Martin reveal of Aleta's internal... things going on, but like, we kind of surmised all this just by the performance and what she was I think they do a really good job still with even the shortcuts they take in other areas. The character work they do is exquisite. Like, all this made
and
sense.
It's,
like,
it's always been great between Aleta and Bill. Every time they're on screen together, I love it.
Yeah, and it's like, I understand why he's mad, but I also understand why he instantly kind of forgave her, and I understand why she stayed away, and he kind of does too, even though he's like, it's not right, but... And what really twists the knife in my gut is where, at the end, he, you know, after they kind of made peace, he's like, hey, do whatever you want to share, I trust you. That, I think, is designed to make us feel a little bit like, oh, God, should he trust Aleta? Should Aleta, and if he, what would Bill say if, well, he knows, like, as soon as she said, we're getting with Dev AIS, he's like, oh, Jesus Christ, like, that's not something that he's super enthused about, but he trusts her, so that means something obviously is going to go wrong.
All right, I'll sign it, do whatever you want with my shares, and they're gone. Like, Dev is just going to hoover those things up, man. I'm telling you.
I also love that where, you know, like, I forgot about how bitterly opposed they were about Margot, and she does the, like, we're not having this argument again, and she tries to win the argument, and he's like, oh, I guess we are having this argument. I fucking loved it so much.
Yeah.
It's, the dynamic, really funny.
A lot of love and a lot of, you know, I don't know what to call it. There's a friction there, too, but... There always has been.
But it's like, you know, it's like kind of like with Raylan and Boyd at the end of Justify, like, we dug coal together. Mm-hmm. Like, there is a special thing about serving side by side in the infancy of the space race. Like, there is a bond that only you that sat in that room and had those experiences probably understand in a way that no one else can.
Totally.
They did manned spaceflight together. And that's always going to be something that bonds them.
Speaking of bondage, the Colonel has Margot in bondage, continues asking her questions about Woman in the Park.
Would you sense some sparks flying? Some 50, some 50 shades
maybe
of red.
Maybe if you were sharpening knives.
Here.
Those are the only sparks flying.
Let me take you to my cement gray room of pain, Margot. Teach you the pleasures of the flesh.
She insists that she doesn't know who the woman is. And then a higher-ranking officer intervenes, and the colonel releases Margot. She's bagged and put on a transport while some ominous music plays.
And this is like, this is very Tom Clancy. When I say Russian as fuck, it's usually I'm saying Tom Clancy as fuck. But like, this is, feels like a very Russian thing to do. That you have lost, this person's going to be free, but you fuck with them.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way that probably can't get, it's like, well, okay, it's like, you know, did the Bullfinch Wrangler order her to be bagged and made it seem like she's going to be shot in the fucking woods? No, but this guy can do it. So fuck this woman. I'm going to scare the shit out of her. And if she has a heart attack on the way, oh, well, you know, it's just a very Russian thing to do.
Totally. To the point where I knew she was being released. I was not fooled by this. I didn't think they were going to kill Margot here.
Right. But Margot herself did. And the way she finally at this point, because that are you surprised that she I get the feeling that she was fighting hard to maintain the secrecy of the Bullfinch.
I don't know what she could have said about that person, though. She doesn't know anything about her.
I agree, but I think she was trying to, like, say, because, like, she could have said a whole bunch of shit. And she was scared enough when once the blood splashed in her face and dude started breaking fingers, I think, like, if I was in that position, absolutely, I'd be like, this woman's about mid-60s. She had a scarf on her head. She had this thing. She's talked about bullfinches and being patient and about the space. I would have sang like a bullfinch, like a migrating bullfinch. And they imply that Margot wasn't doing that. She was trying, like when she meets the bullfinch wrangler, she says, like, I tried to, like, she was trying to protect her. And it's like, how does Margot in this position, it's what I'm saying, why would she do that? Why would she think that this person is better than the other person? Why would she know which side of the it seemed
kind of
crazy.
She's not part of the apparatus here. She's a bystander, essentially.
Like, why was she bossing up against this political coup? It didn't quite make sense to me.
Yeah. That doesn't make sense. I didn't notice that line later when she's talking to her. So that's very strange. Let's go back to Helios, where Richard Hill, or I guess not back to Helios. Richard Hilliard gives the 2002 financial report to the stockholders. Dev comes in the room and interrupts to say that he is now the CEO of the company, and he starts firing people on the spot. Now, I have problems with this scene, but I think it's also a very exciting and good scene in a lot of ways. My only problems stem from, like, his line about you've been locked out of your emails and your accounts and the building, get out of my face. That can't happen. That there is no self-respecting IT worker who would lock the CEO out of a company on the word of a disgraced former employee coming in and claiming I'm the CEO now. No, that would not happen. He would need so many levels of management to come to him and say, yes, this is in fact true. Do this.
Yeah. I think you're right about that. Now, of course, we didn't see how he went into the company. Maybe why he knew there was a meeting of the board, and
but
they
he
were
surprises
all the,
everyone.
I know,
in this
but
room,
he
and
didn't
these
go
are
to
all
the
high up.
This isn't the front door. This isn't the lobby of Helios, right? Mm-hmm. This is probably the inner sanctum. So, like, I'm assuming he went to the front door with, like, some lawyers and paperwork and said, this is what's happening. I don't know. Like, I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt that we just saw the last
paperwork.
We saw the master stroke, right?
We did. Yeah, totally. I just don't know how you get in that door with anything other than an army until it becomes, like, official. You need... opportunities for lawsuits, and, like, you can't just stroll into any company with paperwork, whether it's real or not, and take over.
You don't have to talk about, you take it to the IT worker level, like all these C-suite executives that, like, Dev's like, and you're fired, and they just get up and they grab their shit and they walk out. You would think. Now, I notice that Richard Hilliard doesn't, like, Dev tells him to get it, but he's kind of, like, milling behind the podium behind. He doesn't leave. Like, you know, I thought I think there should have been more pandemonium in terms of, like, you know, this should have been, this felt like a masterstroke rather than, like, the phase one of the takeover. But it made for a more exciting scene. And what I really loved about it is Aleda and Kelly confidently beaming as he starts talking about Icarus and the small mind and we're going to do science again. And then by the end of the scene, you look at them and they look like they both swallowed bowling balls and want to throw them up. It's a great, it tells us the audience. Cause, like, you know, I don't know, maybe these people all had to go, maybe, you know, cause he's getting rid of people's, like, you guys didn't even want us to go to Mars in the first place. You got to get, and I'm like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And the guy at the top that took over from you, all right, he's probably got to go finance department. And then he starts bitching at people by name.
So he's, the thing that has me tripped up a little bit is he's firing, I think, the right people, generally speaking. He apparently doesn't think he needs a finance department because he is financing the whole thing now himself, I guess. I don't know what the status of Helios is after he fires them, but he fires a lot of people for reasons that I think are probably valid. Like, one of the things he says is, hey, you're fired because the subsidies you arranged for the Helium 3 project were criminal. Get out of here. You over here, you didn't want to go to Mars at all. Get out of here. You're not on board with my vision for the future of Helios. I think he's largely saying the right things in this scenario, but it's very scary the way he's doing it. It's cold. It's calm. It's a little bit like... The emphatic nature with which he's firing people feels very personal, feels very spiteful, even if he's firing them for the right reasons or the right people. I'd be very scared if I were Kelly and Elaida that they just unleashed a beast.
And it does seem like there's moves they can make. He's just like hand waving them away. It's like, if you give me a poison pill, I'll swallow it. Sure. If you try to block it, I'll go to SEC. If the SEC's, and it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's very Aaron Sorkin kind of dialogue where it's like a confident, powerful person's talking fast and aggressive, and you're just kind of like, I guess. But like all these other powerful, aggressive, confident people are just completely getting their asses wiped because the writers want it that way. But like I said,
on the back foot here. They didn't know this was going to happen. Devs had premeditated opportunities to come up with a strategy. So
yeah,
he knows. And like all the language he's using, I think is right. It's understandable. Now I'm not like, you know, some titan of industry. I don't know these terms exactly, but I was reading into them a little bit. And that poison pill thing, I assume what he means when he says he'll swallow the poison pill is he'll just keep fucking buying stock. Because a poison pill is where, like, okay, you have a majority share, holdings of the shares, but we're going to go ahead and issue a whole bunch of new shares to dilute your percentage so that you can't actually get to the 51% you would need to control this company. I think what he's saying is, I got money, man. Money means nothing to me. I will keep buying this stuff until you dilute yourself into poverty, essentially. Because, Helios just issued 400 million new shares?
Right.
What's happening over there? And investors lose confidence. And So I think it roughly tracks, but like, it's scary the way he's doing it.
It also implies that he could have always done that. If he could just keep buying shares, he could have always just done a hostile takeover. He just didn't have the gumption. He was too depressed to lick in his wounds to do it.
Well, I mean, he's got the poison pill opportunity here because he has the majority shareholders behind him, I think. If he didn't, then he wouldn't be able to buy his way into that position.
That's what I'm saying. It seemed to me like they're... vomited out a whole bunch of financial bro terms that I don't quite understand, and probably they don't either, just to be like, oh, Dev has got this, you know.
The poison pill thing, I think, is a way to keep him from getting in the position he's in, not a way to get him out. If he's willing to keep buying, it's not a way to push him out of the position he's on.
Okay, it just makes it painful.
Yeah, which he doesn't care, because he doesn't care about the money, I guess. But what it's really doing here is showing that Dev Iasa is back, right?
Yeah, and it's like He goes from early season 3 Dev talking about the Icarus and going back to exploration and getting back to, and then like by the end of the conversation, he's like late season 3 Dev, where he's kind of like petty and vengeful. And so
I think this is his new personality. You know, he is the visionary, but he's no longer the optimist. He's no longer the guy who trusts anyone. He's going to run things with an iron fist, and we'll see how that works out.
Sweet. Can't wait.
Let's, I guess, go over to Ilya. His still is back in action, and Miles got his job back. Miles shows Ilya his new customer, Lee. Unfortunately, his customer doesn't want booze. He only wants one thing smuggled onto the station. His wife. Seems like a big ask.
He's like, blow up doll with her face on it. Best I can do.
Right.
He Pawn Stars him. Because, like, this is the thing. So it feels to me like the conflict here is going to be, we are in debt to this guy, and the debt is unpayable. So
you think so?
Can you explain how they're going to get a North Korean citizen to Mars?
They won't. They That's they 100% they can't. Here's the thing they could do, though. And the thing I think he really means is he wants to speak with his wife. I don't think the North Koreans are allowing communication with his wife. The Russians having priority comms, I think, is going to solve that for him.
Okay. That's literally not what he said, because I was going to go,
what he means, right? He can't literally mean what he said.
Dude, I don't know. Because, the thing is, North Korean culture is so different from ours that, maybe he thinks that there's it's so lax and loosey-goosey and capitalism, money can do anything that he... Because that's the thing. That's the thing from Tom Clancy. A lot of the gas that makes those novels go is the fact that the Soviets cannot comprehend the American way of thinking, and the Americans cannot comprehend why. Because they're looking at the same chessboard, like, Jesus mm-hmm. Christ, why did that guy move that rook? And the Americans are like, oh my God, why? It's like they don't understand what the other are doing, because in their mind they wouldn't do that. They'd do the other thing because they don't have the political, the economic, the cultural things that. And it's like, I mean, that's the thing, is we all say that people are all the same, but we're really not. We have big kind of cultural bubbles and spheres of influence, and there are definitely things lost in translation at big stages. So I took it as he wants him to get the wife, and I was going to where Ilya and Milosh here were going to have to kill him somehow.
Oh my God.
To keep their secret. I thought they were going for they were going to murder this man, which is going to jumpstart. I'm looking for a big criminal plot line from this season and going forward.
I kind of am too, with all the smuggling stuff that's happened. Yeah, but
I'll look like a big idiot if it turns out, he just wants to talk to his wife on the NASA side of the gear, which is still, that is a pretty big problem, though.
It's tough, yeah. I mean, I think Miles could make it happen. He's got a lot of access with his green card or whatever it is, his green badge.
Do you think he can physically, either, because, can he actually give them more bandwidth or priority bandwidth? And if he can, or if he can't, then can he get Lee over to, I guess he already did get Lee over to their side. So that's already.
Yeah. Apparently.
Man, that's a lot easier of a get, though. I got to say that.
I think that's what it is. I think this is literally lost in translation, where he says, I want my wife, but he means I want to speak with my wife.
Yeah.
And he's, but we'll see. Maybe he's a psychotic and thinks he can get a person up here.
It's not psychotic. It's just
I know.
You know what it is? It's like that episode of Star Trek Next Generation where that primitive lady saw them bring someone back from the dead on the sick bay, and then she demanded Picard mm-hmm. And Picard's
your
we're up in a spaceship and I can't, this is beyond my level, and she thinks he's lying. I think it's that kind of thing where they're gonna be like, oh, we can't do it, and he's gonna be like, you fucking capitalists can do anything with enough money and pressure and time mm-hmm. and he'll be a little delusional.
So he's
going to
put pressure on them? I know your secret, and I'll rat you out if you don't give me my
wife?
They're
terrified. It's not even, just the criminal aspect. There's probably espionage. There's probably, geopolitical stakes to this now.
Absolutely. Yeah, breaking that do-not-cross line, I think, is a more serious offense, certainly, than Miles thinks it is. He's pretty nonchalant about it.
Where,
we'll see.
Are we going to have the first Martian murder? I mean,
maybe.
I guess Danny was negligent manslaughter.
Yeah, let's not take away Danny's accomplishments. Come on, the man died, for God's sake.
Did a lot of firsts on Mars.
Yeah.
Oh, we still don't know that he's dead. He could be serving life in prison in Leavenworth or something. We don't know exactly what's happened down there, out there.
It's true. It's true. All right, last scene here where Margo's taken to a roadside meet with the woman from the park bench, who says that she's safe now. The coup is over, and her name being Irina, she's the new head of the Soviet space program, and Irina invites her to work at Star City.
I gotta say, I'm impressed in the coup attempt that they are so meticulous. They had their director of Star City picked out, hand-picked out, and that she was going mm-hmm. and shopping for her American right-hand woman. This is some insane coup planning. But I guess... Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I still don't understand what the hell's going on and why the hell they would want Margo to run this. Because everything that Miss Katish said about her... about that she's been 10 years out of the game, about obsolete technology. Yeah, she's got the good, but like, why would a Russian handpick this dead American woman rather than take like the many?
Because she knows that she can be trusted. Because she is an outsider. Ooh. She's not caught up in the political and controlled. Yeah, because she is a fugitive as well.
Because that's what sounds like. It's like the Russians know their way around rockets, man. Like they gave America their run for the money during the space. And for a good period of like 10 plus years, they were the only way we got people to the space station. Because we shut our shit down and they kept on running their stuff. So like the idea that they'd have to go to an American to run their space, that seems wildly like anti-Russian.
I feel like she's going to be a shadow space worker, program worker, though, right? Like she's not actually going to be Katisha's position. She's a fugitive. Like I said, there's no chance. So she's going to be running things behind the scenes.
Is it possible that now with the coup and the transfer of power, the Russians would be like, well, yeah, we stole one of your citizens. But that was the other government. You can't really hold us responsible.
Clean break.
Look how well she's been treated and she's running her space agency. But you're right. They can't, unless they do some kind of like, oh, it turns out
she shows
we've
up
had
with
your
a
dead
limp and a wrist brace and a blood splattered face. And look how well she's been treated.
Yeah.
Russia, this is great.
Yeah. I do wonder how they're going to.
I'm super curious how that's going to shake out. I mean, they set up a lot of good stuff in this episode, you know, for as much as I'm like not super into the spy stuff. And I think all that is just going to be a hole in my knowledge and memory of this show. I'm just going to be like, there was a time when Margot was a fugitive, and then after that, she was working for Star City. All the machinations are going to be gone. But I'm super interested to see how it shakes out at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I am too. This is like the mother of all setup episodes, because we know we talk about this sometimes in shows, like they like to have these kind of like little moments. There was some certainly drama, but it's not, you know, it's not to show stock and trade. But I do think they are setting up just the mother of all complicated, like intense, you know, they're going to have more governments involved in the mix, more everything.
I mean, we're approaching the middle of a For All Mankind season. So, yeah, things are going to get crazy.
Yeah, because remember, like, we've never had more than a handful of people involved. Like, when the moon bases went to war, it was like 13 Russians against 12 Americans, right? There's like hundreds of people on Mars at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Probably thousands on the moon. Like, if shit kicks off, it could get real wild, real hairy in a way that we've never, on a scale that we've never seen. I just hope
there are more countries involved now than there were astronauts in the initial Jamestown base, like
damn straight, like by a factor of two
at points. So things are gonna get real crazy, man, and I'm here for it. I'm real excited for next episode.
You're listening to Hi Bob. We'll be right back.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. Hi, Bob. Welcome back to more For All Mankind. You want to do feedback?
Yeah, let's do it.
FAM@baldmove.com is how you send in your communications. And we have given you priority traffic, priority bandwidth for this. So use it wisely. Jason's up first, says, hey, guys, is Martian political independence surprisingly soon to come? In the first episode, I believe, is mentioned by Marv that a self-sustaining Mars is the goal. And it seems like the base is well on its way. We've already seen the introduction of civilian workforce, the beginnings of unique Martian culture, and what looks like to be a potential class struggle. We're also seeing a parallel storyline with a potential coup in the Soviet Union, which could leave stateless and moneyless people on Mars. Fun fact, there was a Russian briefly stuck in space during the fall of the Soviet Union in our history. I did not know that, but that sounds interesting that you have, yeah, like Tom Cruise in Terminal. Like, you don't have a country no more, bro. Yeah.
You're in international waters. Like,
yeah. Well, you're in the world's biggest border crossing. You got no visa, dude. This company town stuff and the upstairs downstairs situation seems like it won't last. Oh my God. Downton Abbey on Mars. Why have I not looked at this through this lens yet?
Oh yeah.
It seems
who's
like
your pad. Is it pad Miss Padmore? Who's your Miss Padmore?
Padmore. I mean, whoever the executive chefs are, I was thinking who's the Mr. Carson. Is that Palmer guy, right?
Oh yeah, for sure.
And Ed the Lord HR. Grantham, Danny's Lady G.
Who's Lady G? Is that Maggie Smith?
That's Lord Grantham's wife, Cara.
Oh, okay.
Cora? Cara.
Lady
Cora.
G.
Lady McG. So this company, yeah, it won't last. And when the political systems form on Mars, they're no longer reliant on Earth for survival. They have immediate control over the valuable resources, possibly an asteroid in orbit and the base itself. But inevitable that some kind of independence movement similar to the American Revolution occurs. We've seen astronauts like Ed rebel on the moon and with other astronauts last season on Mars before, but in a position where their lives were in Earth's hands, and pretty soon that status quo will change. Maybe even toss in something like the discovery of the microbiological life on Mars, where it's possible for extremely different priorities between Martian colonists and Earth scientists. I think it's inevitable that an independent Mars happens soon. There's just too many cracks showing. This, my only question, because this is inevitable. This is the expanse. This is the epitome of the expanse. Like, you know, Earth getting bullied or Mars getting bullied by Earth, etc. Is, like, they're not even growing their own crops yet. You know, like, they got three quarters, which means 25% of their citizens starve if Earth says, fuck you guys. And I know there is limited manufacturing on Mars and the moon, but like, it still seems for a long time they're going to be reliant on like microchip manufacturing, advanced medical stuff. Like,
yeah, this is for sure not a this season thing, although they're putting a lot of pieces in place. I agree with you. I think we could see, I don't even know if it's a next season thing. I mean, the amount of time it takes to get real operations up in space, it seems like it's compressed in this show, but it's also a long time. I don't know. I could maybe see it happening next season where Mars tries to claim its independence, whether that's through the private sector saying, we're just not going to listen to what the government tells us anymore, and we're claiming Happy Valley for our own, and we're ejecting all of your NASA astronauts.
How would the countries take that back if they did do that?
I mean, there's not a lot of ways to take it back. I guess you could blow up the Phoenix, I guess.
You could also just arrest all the board members of the company doing that here on Earth. So it's like I said, it's like you'd
have
to.
Sure, but
like,
if it's a self-sustaining community already, then you have to go take it back or destroy it. I mean, the other option is you do something that I think would be publicly reprehensible to everyone on Earth, which is to blow up the Mars base. But you could do it. I think we're looking at the first interplanetary war if we get to like season 5 or maybe 6 even.
Yeah, and then we're definitely going more towards the expanse than we are to a Star Trek future at that point.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like the Star Trek future, it'll have speed bumps like that where, you know, people
like
try to assert
like a whole ass eugenics war with guys like Khan taking over the planet. Yeah, there'll be some bumps, sure. There'll be some bumps.
But, you know, eventually you get to that utopia. So, yeah, I mean, the bumps could be big.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty big bump.
But I like it. And the other thing is, like, we're doing this, like, ultimate brinksmanship where it's, like, literally nuking the Mars colony versus, like, getting them. But, like, the reality is there's a lot of economic power that the workers could flex in, like, a strike or, you know, a takeover. It's like, well, yeah, we would rather keep paying you pittance and taking all the money, but like we'll accept 50% less money in exchange for not having to rebuild the Mars station. You know, like there, it doesn't have to like go to the mattresses, so to speak.
Yeah, and political power. I mean, Dev could get in there and really treat those workers great, right? Like, mm-hmm. treat them better than they're treated on Earth and say, don't you want to pull for us? Like,
possible.
We're going to claim our independence. We're all in this together, right? Rally the troops around his cause. There are so many levers of power that can be pulled here that I think it's going to be fascinating when those things start to come to a head.
Next message from Dr. Barry Goodman. I don't know if you remember this guy, but this goes back to breaking like the electrical magical electromotive days of Breaking Bad. This is a old school Bald Move fan.
Totally.
Says, good morning.
His Corvette, I believe, is in Breaking Bad. It's the one that Walt's washing.
It's true.
Yeah.
It says, good morning. Regarding no deaths as part of the commercial race to space, we talked about how we didn't think that they're, you know, like wait till, you know, Virgin Atlantic and SpaceX and all that start killing astronauts in space. He says there's already been a death in space. He sent me an article from 2014 where Virgin Galactic crashed. One of their test pilots crashed. Both of the pilots crashed. One of them is able to escape and one of them died. Long-term flight engineer and test pilot Michael Alsbury was killed Friday when a Virgin Galactic spaceship exploded and broke apart mid-flight above California's Mojave Desert. He was an experienced flyer who co-piloted the same craft when it first broke the sound barrier last year. He worked for Scaled Composites, which built and operates Spaceship Two, for more than a decade. So I think the key distinction here and why I forgot it is that the whole over California's Mojave Desert, like this was like more, I think this was treated by the press more as like an experimental jet than like, oh my God, astronauts died in space. Like,
yeah, that makes sense.
We can get behind people wrecking in airplanes, but when seven astronauts do it re-entering Earth's atmosphere, it's like, holy shit, a national news. It's like, but you're right. His overall point is true that like the private space flight program has already killed a person. So
can you imagine how much stink there would be right now if every SpaceX attempted flight was manned? We would have killed. I mean, that program, that company would have been shut down by the government at this point, right?
To be fair, I don't think anyone ever suggested that. Like, even Matt,
you could say
the same thing about NASA's early days, too. But
but at least that was publicly funded. The private part of it is what we're worried about.
An interesting Earthborn parallel to Miles' situation from Steve. He says, in 1993, my buddy and I were a couple years out of high school and didn't have much going on. We decided to be an adventure to go work on an Alaskan fishing boat and somehow got to Seattle and signed on at the seafood company working on a trawler processor. We figured we'd get a bit of adventure mixed with a good chunk of money after a 2 to 3 month stint in the Bering Sea. Our first hint that our dreams of glory might be off was at the contract and orientation meeting where we learned our salary would be 0.002% of the net profit from the trip. That the HR lady was making a joke, but no, that was the pay. Okay, we thought the ship probably makes a shit ton of money and we'll be fine. I spent the next 2 months in the Bering Sea working for 12 to 15 hours a day, 7 days a week on the inside of a factory in the huge ship processing cod and pollock. It was definitely dangerous, lots of blades and crazy machines, and anything but glorious in the way something like The Deadliest Catch portrays it. We spent almost the entire time in a windowless metal jungle, and when we did get outside, it was always dark. You had to supply all your own gear. Anything you wanted to buy from the little store was charged against your future paycheck. I'm sure they made a killing on cigarettes. In the end, the ship made $2 million of profit, which means our pay worked out to about $1,800, less than $2.75 an hour. Folks who were in McDonald's at the time was paying $5. Folks who were the career employees made anywhere between $200 to $400 a day, salary as shift leads, managers, and bridge crew. I could go on and on about how every plot point of Miles Marsden, his name is what we did. The biggest difference to the show is the food was amazing. They actually didn't skimp on feeding us. So yeah, I bet you ate a lot of cod and pollock. a lot of bycatch, snow crab bycatch. I mean, this like literally Earth's history is littered with people taking advantage of young idealistic people with not many prospects to just abuse and use them because they know there'll be a fresh crop next year when they need to do it again.
Look at the video game industry right now. That is its MO. Burnout, young, ambitious, and idealistic kids.
Yeah. And then they're not getting, you know, $2.75 an hour, but like they're probably making $100,000 working 80, 90 hours a week.
In some of the highest cost of living areas in the world. Yeah.
it ain't much of a life. So that's the thing. You got the, like I said, you see the bad side of the Soviet way things are done, but you know, there's work to be done on our side of the street too. Elav is our final emailer. Says, a thought while listening to the recap about a latest plan for Kelly's private funding for her research as the only living child of a divorced, widowed. So this is the person that pointed out that like Kelly should be loaded, and you get the internet points today because it turns out she was, to the tune of a couple percentage of Helios net gross value, I guess stock value. Some big winners of internet points this week for the predictions. Elav and who's the other guy? Robin Versailles or Versailles. That's going to be it for this week's show. For all mankind, FAM at baldmove.com is how you get in touch with us. If you want to know what else we're doing, we're starting up Fargo the new season of Fargo this week. We're checking out Napoleon. Speaking of Joel Kinnaman, we'll be checking him out in Silent Night in the, what is that, December 1st, November 30th. How do I keep up with all this stuff going on at Bald Move? Well, it's easy. You put at Bald Move into your favorite social media app, unless it's TikTok, then it's at Baldest Move, and follow us there for all the things we're doing. And if you want to support us, get some ad-free feeds, some extra bonus audio and video content, we could use the support. Support.baldmove.com. That's going to do it for this week at For All Mankind. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Bye, Bob.